Communication. Let's just look at this to demonstrate what happens in communication often. See, that's what you were talking about a while ago. She's just simply saying, I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize that what you heard is not what I meant. Talk about confusion. Well, that's what happens in communication. Quite a bit. She's still trying to figure it out. Don't try to figure it out. You can't. Oh, you want to copy it? I see. All right. I'll leave it up there for a minute, Prue. And you can write it down. But that's what happens in communication, and that's why we suggested that we take time to ask questions. Keep asking questions until you're both satisfied that you've reached a level of mutual agreement, and even though you may not totally have the same idea, at least you know that there is no misunderstanding on the subject. You may still disagree on it, but at least you know there's no misunderstanding. Nothing will complicate a situation faster than disagreement plus misunderstanding. But if there's understanding, and we understand, and I know, okay, you feel that way, and you know I feel this way, and I know why you feel that way, and you know why I feel this way, and even though we can't agree on it, we have communicated effectively and satisfactorily. You see the difference? All right, have you gotten that now? Okay. Now let's remember, you have in your book the definitions of communication. Communication occurs whenever there is a meeting of meaning between two or more persons. That is taken from a book by the name of The Miracle of Dialogue. The Miracle of Dialogue. It's in the back of your book in your bibliography. The author is Rule Howe, H-O-W-E, and it's one of the best books I've found on the techniques of communication. It gets somewhat clinical, and it's not as interesting reading as some other things, but if you'll take the time to read some of it, you'll find some very important principles on communication. And this is one of his definitions. A meeting of meaning. What do you mean? Not just what are you saying, but what do you mean? Because in any given situation, any two people can say the same thing and mean two different things. See, I could ask one person, what was your father like? My father was a very strong man. And I could ask another person, what was your father like? Well, he was very strong too. Then I say, okay, what do you mean? And one says, my father was very strong in his authoritarian leadership. We weren't able, ever allowed to say anything. And the other one says, my father was very strong in his gentleness. We had the security of knowing he always cared. Same statement, two totally different meanings. And it's the meaning you have to get to in order to be able to understand what the person is trying to say. Do you understand that? That's a very important principle of understanding how we can communicate. Make sure you get to the meaning. Then from Brandt, Dr. Henry Brandt, the second definition, means to overcome, to communicate, means to overcome the desire to conceal feelings and thoughts and rise to the level of honesty of expression. And I've underlined the phrase honesty of expression because I think that, of course, is the key to communication. Honesty of expression. And please remember, please keep going back to the fact that honesty must always be on the basis of Ephesians 4:15. Write it there alongside that definition, will you? The three guidelines of Ephesians 4:15, do you remember what they are? We've gone over them a couple of times. Let's review them. What are they? Can you remember any of them? All right. There was the third one, was Christ-likeness. What's another one? Developmental. Excellent. That was the second one. And love was the first one. All right, you have three guidelines. Love, developmental, and Christ-like. So when you think in terms of meeting and going to the level of honesty of expression, it should be on the basis of Ephesians 4:15. Don't forget that. Now, another one from Howe's book, interaction between persons in which one seeks to give himself as he is and seeks to know the other as the other person is. Now, at this point, I want to find, if I can here, a little statement that I've taken from a book that I've recommended to you. The book is Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? And in the process of the book, he gives the answer. And the answer is a plaintive little statement that I think really says something. Listen. If I tell you who I am, you may not like who I am, and it's all that I have. Can you understand that? We said in that definition we just looked at that one of the statements that Howe makes is in which one person seeks to give himself as he is and to know the other person as they are. Well, in giving myself as I am, what that means is I am telling you how I feel about something. I'm unveiling myself, if you want to call it that. I'm revealing myself. Supposing I come to you and I say, I'm having a problem in such and such an area, and I'd like to talk with you about it. And so I open up my heart, and I tell you that I'm having a difficulty in a given area. And the response I get from you is one of surprise. You're having a problem with that? Why, I can hardly believe that that would be true. All of a sudden, I find myself feeling like a child standing with muddy shoes on a clean floor. Where do I go next? What do I do now? I hardly dare take a step in any direction because I'll dirty the floor further. I've revealed myself. I've opened my life up. I've expressed myself honestly, and I have sensed rejection. That's what he's trying to say. If I tell you who I am, how I feel, and you don't like who I am, it's all I have. I don't have anything else. And this is one of the big fears that we all face when we think in terms of communication. The fact that we are not certain how the other person will receive us if I really say what I feel. I call this one of the primary risks of communication. The risk of possible rejection. And that brings up one of our primary points down here under primary conditions. If you'll notice, point B, it's a matter of being willing to have the commitment and the courage to do it, even though I may be rejected, even though I may be misunderstood, even though I may come out on the short end of the stick, even though it may not prove to be as beneficial as I hope, but I am willing to take the risk because communication is that important to me. Now, I've suggested to you that on more than one occasion, I've done this and I have experienced rejection on the part of the other person. I am glad to say that those situations are far, far in the minority. Most of the time, people will respond favorably to an honest effort to want to establish communication, to want to establish that kind of a relationship. Most of the time, people will respond positively to that when you go and express yourself, either to apologize or to admit a need or to ask a question that sort of unveils you or reveals you. Most people will respond in an honest effort to want to establish communication. Now we have down here this matter of one of the primary conditions being recognizing the importance of communication. Now I hope you do. And if you don't, I ask you to consider it from the standpoint of Scripture as well as the standpoint of practicality. The importance of communication. All I can give you is my own experience, my own background, and that is that I don't know of anything that is in greater need in most marriages than this area. The willingness to recognize the need for it and to work at it as honestly as we know how. And incidentally, time does not necessarily resolve this completely. Florine and I, at 30 years of marriage, still have to continue to work at making sure that we are communicating. Misunderstanding is such an easy thing to happen. On a small matter. Just a little thing. And you fail to communicate, and it blows itself out of proportion because of misunderstanding. So it's just something that requires a recognition of the need and a commitment to work at it right along the way. Now let's look at some of the personal qualities required in order to communicate well. We have several listed here. We've already talked about the one that is first, the matter of honesty, and Ephesians 4:15, and so on. You have there those three points that I mentioned a moment ago. The second one is being open and teachable. Now, what do you think openness and teachability mean? I'd like to hear you react to those. What does it mean to be open? And what does it mean to be teachable? All right? All right. Suggestion is made that it implies flexibility. And it does. What else? Yes. All right. A willingness to listen to what they have to say. Yes. You're interested. Now, earlier in the questions that you were answering with Jim, a word came up that I think is key at this point. I'm not sure if any of you will remember. One of the things that you talked about in the question regarding what happens when I think someone has a preconceived image of me, how do I react to that? And one of the words you mentioned would be very helpful at this point. Defensiveness. You see, if I'm not teachable, if I'm not open, many times it's because I'm defensive. Many times it's because I don't want you to get too far into my life, because you might find out something that I don't want you to find out. Or at least that may be a fear I have. So I'm defensive. In the book that I recommended, Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am, he talks about the five levels of communication, and we're not going to mention them now, but you'll see them in the book there. And one of the first ones he mentions is the cliche level. That's the shallowest one. That's the level, you know, where you get up and you say, how you doing? And fine. How did it go today? Great. And so on. Just casual, surface communication. It doesn't require a thing. And it's amazing how much of that people settle for. Now, it's not wrong to have that level of communication as long as you're not limited to that level. As long as you know you can go deeper if you have to. And in marriage relationships, it's essential that communication be total. So when you read that book, remember that total communication is the goal of marriage. To work at being totally honest and totally open. And in this matter of being teachable, then we have to be careful that we not allow ourselves to be defensive, to feel threatened. Because that will inevitably break down communication. We've talked about listening. Point number three, a disciplined listener. And I have down there, I don't know if it appears in the notes or not, but an illustration that often happens. We're listening to something that someone is telling us and it reminds us of something, and before long we're thinking about what it reminds us of more than what the person is saying. And so we're not really listening. Our minds are involved in something else. Or another thing that happens in listening is that I will listen let me put it this way. If we're discussing an issue on which I have an opinion, and I say, what do you think about that? Now, I've already got an opinion. And if I allow myself to, I think my opinion is good, so I think I'm right. So I start listening to you. And I see that your opinion isn't like my opinion. Now what do? All right, I have a choice. I can really listen to what you're having to say and say, maybe they're right, and maybe I better reconsider what I'm thinking. That's the mature thing to do. Or I can say, hey, this guy doesn't agree with me, and I better try to prove my point and show him he's wrong. So while you're talking, I'm thinking up ways of convincing you that I'm right, and I'm not really listening to what you have to say. Communication doesn't take place. I have turned off my listening ability, and I may be hearing, but my mind is occupied in thinking up an argument to come back at you with to try and convince you that I'm right. Yes? Of course it is. Of course it is. That statement that I put up here the other day, and I don't know if I have it with me, but you remember, yes, I do. And I'll just put it back up here for us to look at so that we're reminded of those three areas. I would like to suggest to you, since it's been brought to our attention, that this statement could be very helpful to us if we kept it in mind in the area of witnessing. Because this is a need that all people have, not just Christian people. Everybody has a need to be listened to be taken seriously, and to be understood. Now that can be a tremendous door opener to witnessing. I find when I'm traveling on a plane, many, many times, the person sitting next to me, if I can involve them in a conversation, ask them a few questions about their job or about their family or something like that, and really listen and get them to talking, they'll talk for quite a while. And they'll open up, and many times it will open a door for me to tell them how the Lord Jesus Christ has met certain needs in my life without trying to dump anything on them. You see, witnessing is not necessarily trying to get everybody to make a decision. Let's get that straight. Witnessing is letting people know how wonderful Jesus Christ is because of His involvement in my life and how I've experienced the reality of His life in my own experience, and helping them understand how they can have the same kind of a relationship. But primarily, it is witnessing to the reality of the work of God through Jesus Christ in my life in some practical way. And one of the best ways to get into that many times is just by listening. Just by listening. See, too often in witnessing, we feel that we have to be the talkers. So we have our little thing all worked out, our little illustrations, our little thing we're going to go through. We've got 4 points we've got to hit, and so, boy, we've got to work it out. And while they're talking, we're not even listening. We're trying to figure out, now, let's see, how can I get the next point in? And we miss the whole thing. And we may leave saying, boy, I really witnessed to that guy. But we didn't. We didn't even communicate with him because we didn't listen. That's how important that is. All right? So a disciplined listener. We have Proverbs 13:3 there as a passage to refer to, and I do not remember it right off. Let me just look it up. It says, he who guards his mouth preserves his life. He who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. Now, that's just a basic guideline. Listening is more important than speaking on many occasions. And in communication, that is certainly true. Now, watch it, men. Watch it. I can hear some of you already saying, you see, that's why I'm so quiet, because I want to listen to what you have to say. One of the big difficulties that most wives have is that their husbands stop talking to them. As you know, it's interesting. I just read something. Oh, I know. It's a new book that was just brought to my attention. I haven't finished it yet. I don't even remember the name of it. But this lady starts out writing the book by giving a personal testimony. And she tells about how in their courtship, her husband was a very interesting conversationalist. And they would go out to dinner, and he always had something interesting to talk about. And he always brought up things, and they talked about it, and boy, it was just great. But when they got married, something happened. Things changed. And they'd go out to dinner, and they'd spend practically the whole time just eating and kind of looking at one another, and not a whole lot was going on in conversation. And I've had many wives say to me, you know, I don't mind my husband being quiet if he would just talk some of the time. Well, I think that's very important. I really do. I think that we husbands need to recognize that our wives want to hear what we're thinking. Florine tells me on more than one occasion, see, we have our own process worked out regarding decision making, as she tried to point out yesterday. But she has said on more than one occasion that it is more important to her to hear me tell her the process of my thinking in arriving at that decision than the decision itself. Some of you wives agree with that? I think that's really true. Because that is who your husband is. You see, that's his thinking process, and that's what you want to know. So while it's important to be a good listener, remember, don't hide behind that. And when your wife says, well, why don't you talk more? I don't want to hear any of you saying, well, it's because I'm such a good listener. That's a cop-out. And let's face the fact that it also requires expression on our part. Remember what it says down there in point D, the matter of the fact that you listen five times faster than the person can speak. Yes. All right, the statement is made, or the question is asked, if the wife majors on being a better listener herself, wouldn't it encourage the husband to do a little more talking? I think that's probably true. Now, there may be some periods of silence, but eventually you might get the picture, you know? But I think that's a very valid principle. Thank you for bringing that up. Anything else you want to mention at this moment? Yes, Jim. It can well be. It can well be. It can be, and it can be the fact that not only, let me see if I can expand that just a little bit. Not only unresolved conflicts, but if in one area of your interpersonal relationship you have had an unhappy experience when you've tried to talk your way through it, that's an unresolved conflict over here, all right? And maybe right now I'm not thinking about that particular conflict, but I have already developed a fear or a reservation that if we try to discuss something else, we'll end up the same way we did the last time, so it's not worth the effort. In that sense, I would agree. Therefore, these things are all tied together, and these unresolved conflicts will create apprehensions in other areas, and eventually the whole communication spectrum begins to suffer because of an unwillingness to work your way through some of the conflicts that you face. Does that speak to the point, Jim? Thank you. Yes, Rock.
It seems like one other cause of this, very practically, is if it goes back to the thing that you're talking about self-development, and that is if you begin to stagnate in your thinking or your life pattern, then you just flat run out of things to say.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't think of anything to say.
Mm-hmm.
as much as you like here. Mm-hmm. So it seems like that's where the business of that self-development and continuing to go through the growing, stretching process for the rest of your life is important. Otherwise, it'll catch up to you, and you just flat don't have anything to talk about.
All right. The importance of continuing self-development for both. And of course, along with that, I think that not only the matter of self-development so that I have an abundance of information, but cross-development. In other words, if my wife has an interest in some subject, then I need to familiarize myself with that subject in order to speak meaningfully to it when she's interested in talking about that. When we first met, Florine's interest in sports was not that great. And it just so happens that my interest is probably, you know, too great. I got involved in everything that came along and still enjoy sports very, very much, and involved in them or watching them. So my favorite programs are sports programs of one kind or another. I don't watch them all, but the ones that I can and I'm interested in. Well, when we first started out, after we came back to the United States, she didn't know, really, she didn't know a first down from a foul shot in basketball. Maybe some of you don't either. Well, all right. But she decided, now I didn't ask her to do this, but she decided that she would come and sit there and watch some of these things and ask questions. And so, little by little, we started to work at that. And as the boys grew up, of course, they got involved in sports. And so it became sort of a family project anyway. And we really had some fun times, particularly when Florine would make a comment that was probably not right on target. And the boys would say, "Oh, Mom," you know, and it was kind of a joke there. But she kept working at it and learning. And today she really enjoys certain sports. And so we have a great time that way. Well, okay, she was willing to expand her self-development, but not necessarily in an area that was just interesting to her, but an area that was interesting to me. By the same token, I have the same responsibility to try and find out areas in which she's interested and understand them so that we can communicate on those issues as well. That's good, Rock. Thank you. Anything else you'd like to add at this point before we go on? All right, let's just look further on the notes here. Please note, point E, the bad listening habits. There are lots of them. These are only a few. One of the worst ones is the first one. And that is that after a period of time, you think you become so well acquainted with your mate, so familiar with them, that you anticipate what they're going to say. And you sort of turn off your listening. You say, "Oh, she's going to start talking about that again. I know what she thinks. She said it before. So my mind takes a vacation." And I go off over here, and all of a sudden I pick up the key word that lets me know she's almost finishing, and I bring my mind back over here and get involved again. Now, you see, I've stopped preaching and gone to meddling. I can tell that right now. But the point is, it really happens when we allow ourselves to get overly settled in what we think is our, quote, understanding, unquote, of our mate. Remember what this little statement says: to be listened to and taken seriously. Taken seriously. So be careful about that one. And then I have the illustration, I don't know if it appears in the magazine, in the book or not, about the man who has a difficulty at the office. Is that in the book? No? All right, it's just an illustration that is a factual one, by the way. One gentleman who had a tough time at work, interpersonal relationships, and he'd come home and he'd tell his wife about it. And after a few times, she just got tired of hearing about it. And one day he came home and he started to tell her, and she just tuned out because she figured, you know, it was going to be the same little story. But this time, he was really having difficulty and had resigned his position. And she hardly heard him say it because she wasn't listening And when he finished, he said, "What do you think of that?" And she made some comment like, "Well, I'm sure you'll take care of it." And he said, "Take care of what?" "Oh, well, that difficulty you're having at the office." He said, "Did you hear me say that I resigned?" "You what?" She wasn't listening. See, that can happen. So be careful. Be careful. Then selective listening. Oh, wow, this one is so interesting. I'm not exaggerating on how frequently that takes place. We hear what we want to hear. You're listening to me right now, and you hear what you want to hear. And it's amazing how many misunderstandings there will be from some of the things I'm saying. Because you'll hear a certain thing, and you'll go out and say, "George said thus and so," and you didn't hear the other part of it that may have put it into a different perspective. Jim and I had a counseling situation. It was while he, at the time that he had just come back, and he was sitting in on some of my counseling sessions just to kind of get the feel of it and kind of a training situation. And this particular couple came for a period of time because of some unresolved areas of conflict that they were having that had been going on for some time. And we sat and we spent 3 days, basically, and each day somewhere between 3 and 4 hours. And in fact, a little more than that. So I suppose, you know, it was somewhere between 12 and 15 hours of intensive counseling. And at the end, we summarized, as I try to do in all my sessions, we summarized the situation by showing them what the problem had been, what God had to say about it, what God says the steps are to be taken, and then some practical steps to follow in order to implement that. We reviewed those things. I asked them questions to make sure they understood. To the best of our ability, both Jim and I felt that the thing had been clarified, that they both understood, that we really had gotten outside of the realm of the problem. And we're making some progress now. So, off they went back to their homes in another part of the United States. And we, full of hope, you know, that we had gotten through on the thing. 2 weeks later, I got a phone call. The wife, distraught. "George, we're having a problem." "Oh?" I almost said, "Well, what else is new?" But I didn't. She said, "He insists that you said thus and so, and I remember you saying da ta ta ta." I said, "You do?" She said, "Yes, you know you said..." And I said, "I'm sorry, but I did not say that. What I said was..." And so I reminded her. And it was very clear. Later I checked with Jim to make sure that that's exactly what I had said, and he remembered it. But she had not even heard it. She had grabbed on to one phrase, taken it out of context, and gone back and totally misunderstood. Jim, could it have been more total? Really? I mean, seriously. It was like we say in flying, she was 180 degrees off course. I couldn't understand it. But it happens. Particularly when there are defenses, particularly when we're threatened, particularly when we have strongly preconceived ideas, when we don't want to admit that we're wrong in a certain area, then we listen and hear selectively what we want to hear. Incidentally, this is one of the respects that I have for a man like Bill Gothard in his seminars, because I'm sure that many people go away from his seminars and misinterpret much of what he says because they listen selectively. And they'll say, "Well, Bill Gothard said, but I'm not sure he said that." That's what they want to think he said because it accommodates their situation. There are certain tune-out words that I've listed here. I've just put a few down. But there are words that the other person will use that will just sort of immediately tune you out. The wife says, "You know, I think we ought to go visit my folks." You've just clicked this receiver off right there. Or she says, "You know, we really do need some new drapes." Off goes the receiver. tune out words. Or he says, how would you feel if I went out Saturday afternoon and played some golf with the fellas? Click. Off went her receiver with the word golf. And so on. There are tune out words we have to watch out for. Some of the problems, some of the bad listening habits that we can develop. Then you have a whole segment on the purposes of communication, which we're not going to go into right now, because they're quite obvious. You have them all listed in your book, I believe. You can study them and look at them and just recognize some of the basic purposes in the matter of communication. Let's talk about these problems that I suggest, the problems of communication. The first one, and I think it's very, very important to realize it, and that's Isaiah 53:6. And that simply is the fact that God made a statement regarding men in general that everyone has gone astray, and it says, we all seek our own way. Now that doesn't change when we come to a knowledge of Jesus Christ, because Jeremiah 17:9 says the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And basically we are still self-centered. We are still very selfish individuals. Now these are the areas that God is seeking to change in our lives. But there is nothing that is a bigger problem or a block to communication than my self-centeredness. And so, communication demands a willingness to be selfless. Selfless. The whole concept of love that we've looked at. Looking at things from the other person's point of view. Putting the best interest of the other person ahead of my own. Selflessness. And then, the matter of language is a problem. I was surprised when I found this little fact. The dictionary lists 14,000 meanings for the 500 most common words. Over 28 meanings per word. Now that alone, you see, I'm not talking about language when I say, you know, a foreign language or anything like that. I'm talking about people that speak English, basically, but to whom the same word can indicate two different things, can mean two different things. Or a word that they may not understand. And so, in order to be able to communicate, we better be sure that we are thinking about the same meaning for that word. A man comes home from work and he says he's tired. What he means is, he's been pushing it hard all day. He'd like to sit down and rest. He says, how are you doing, to his wife? And she says, man, I am tired. Now what she's saying may be entirely different from what he's saying. He wants to sit down and rest. She's tired of being cooped up in that house with two children all day. She's ready to climb the walls. She'd like to get out and do something. But he says, oh, you're tired. Okay, that's great. Tell you what we'll do. We'll just sit down and watch television tonight. You know. And she says, you know, he doesn't understand me. Well, that's true. He doesn't. So you have to make sure that you communicate and express what you mean by the word you're using. You know. And so on. Some other problems. We've talked about them. You mentioned some of these things in the answers you gave. Fears, defensiveness. Another one that you didn't mention but is in the notes here, that's number E, letter E, recalling past failures. Please don't do that with one another. Don't keep bringing up things from the past that happened. Yeah, they happened, but they're over with. Hopefully you've gotten past them. Don't keep bringing them up and using them as a wedge or a lever to prove your point. Past failures, leave them in the past. Keep moving from this moment on. You remember the little illustration, I'm happening. Keep looking at one another in that context. I'm happening. And then the very simple thing of nonverbal communication signals. See, I look at you and I get nonverbal communication signals from many of you right now. You're having a hard time keeping up with some of this. You're tired. We've been going hard for 3.5 days or 2.5 days. There's been a lot of information. And I don't blame you. I'm sort of, you know, up to here with it myself. So I can understand that. But I keep looking around. The thing that keeps me going when I see some people starting to kind of phase out is to find one or two that are really alert. And then I concentrate on their faces to keep me going. What I'm saying is, we always, all of us, are continually giving off nonverbal signals. Right? And when you're talking with your husband or your wife, you know some of those. You know some of the facial expressions, some of the looks in their eyes, some of the way their eyebrows might lift, or something else they might do that communicates to you immediately, and you wonder. See? So, when you have those questions, what should you do?
Ask.
That's right. I do that more than once. If I'm counseling someone and I say something and I see their eyebrows go like this, I just stop immediately. I say, does that surprise you? Oh, no, no. I say, now, come on, be honest. What did you think right then when I said it? Well, yeah, it does kind of surprise me. Okay? Now, let me explain it further. And we go on from there. But it's much better to do that. Watch for the signals, read them, and use them. One of the things that bothers me about as much as anything else is when I'm trying to talk to someone personally, is to have them look off somewhere else. You know, when I'm trying to communicate with them, I want eye contact. And if I see them saying, that's right, you know, and I see them looking over my shoulder and here and there, on two occasions, I've done something, and I don't advocate it. I've just done it as an experiment. I'll keep talking in the same tone. I don't change my voice, my facial expression, but I change the subject completely. And then I'll say, what do you think? Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And I'll say, what's a good idea? Well, and then they realize. Well, as I say, I don't do that very often. But it really is discourteous. If I'm talking with you, you deserve my attention. I don't care what the subject is. I don't care who you are. If you have the desire to talk with me, and that includes my wife or anyone else, then you deserve my total attention for that moment. And if I can't give it to you, then I should say, look, right now, I don't think we'd better try and talk about this. But why don't we do it later? Rather than trying to fake my way through that. That is discourteous. Do you understand? And that is so essential to this matter of communication. Then you have the principles that I'd like to recommend for you to study. Basically, the concept in Luke 6:31 is that we are to treat others as we want them to treat us. Basically, that's what it says. Show the same kind of consideration to them that we want them to have for us. And you have the example of Christ and some of the qualities that he exemplified in his communicating with people. His matter of acceptance, the matter of empathy, which we discussed earlier, and the matter of honesty. He did not avoid having to face the truth with the person, even though it may have made the person feel somewhat uncomfortable originally. You see, the woman at the well in chapter 4 of John may have initially felt a little uncomfortable that Jesus put the finger on her about the matter of the fact that she didn't tell the truth regarding her married situation or her present situation with men. But Jesus did it honestly, and he must have done it in such a way that it did not make her feel rejected. Because she stayed there and kept talking and kept listening. And not only that, she went back to the village, told the people. She said, I've met someone, one of the most wonderful people I've ever met. He's told me everything I did and all the rest of it. And I still think he cares for me. And it says many believed because of the woman's testimony. And then they went out with her, remember, and they listened to Jesus. And then they said, now we believe because we've listened to you, not only because of the woman's testimony, but it was the woman's testimony that brought them out to hear Jesus. So even though he had to deal with her honestly and directly and speak the truth and make her aware of the fact that he knew she was trying to deceive him and all the rest of it, in spite of that, she did not feel rejection. So we see in Jesus the quality of honesty with the qualities of Ephesians 4:15 that we've talked about. And then finally, the matter of personal discipline. Now, in your notebook, it's possible, let me just look here, because I do not remember everything that we were able to put in the notebook and what we were not able to put in the notebook. But if this appears, yes. I would like very much to recommend that you read page 32. We can't take time now, of course, but just read that little section on verbal and nonverbal communication. It gives you a good basis for understanding the difference in the two. Any questions now that you have on this subject immediately? We'll give you opportunity tomorrow morning to ask any further questions, but is there anything in particular? Yes, Larry.
What do you do in a case, Jordan, when the verbal communication and the nonverbal communication are contradictory? The fellow comes in, tells his wife he loves her with a frown on his face, or a man is saying something that's exciting or good or acceptable and wholesome, but nonverbally he's counterproductive. As a listener, what should my response be to that if I notice it?
Well, what I try to do is make sure, and it means asking questions, but to make sure that I'm not misreading something. See, I don't want to jump to the conclusion, Larry, that their nonverbal communication is really indicative of what I think it might be indicative of. Maybe there's something, maybe they've got something in their eye, you know, that's bothering them. And so they're really saying what they think, but their facial expression might indicate, you know, that it's not true. So I just ask a question. You know, they, well, I appreciate that, but is that what you really mean? Or however I can ask questions to try to find out that the two are not, as you say, contradictory to one another. Normally, I would say that the nonverbal communication would match the verbal. But whenever there is a doubt, then I think the best thing is to pursue the reason and clarify it. That's the best suggestion I can make. I don't know of any simple answer to that. Any other question or thought on communication? Yes.
Is our ability to communicate with others related to our ability to communicate with God?
Question is our ability to communicate with others related to our ability to communicate with God? Not necessarily, for the simple reason that with God, if I have any positive concept of God, I know that He accepts me just as I am. Therefore, I don't have to be concerned about anything I tell Him, because I know I have complete acceptance. He'll never reject me. He says that. You know, Jesus said, "Whoever comes to me, I will in no wise cast out. If any man thirst, let him come to me and drink. Come unto me, all ye that labor." I mean, the continual involvement of His invitation lets me know that I can come. I don't have to fear rejection. I'm not always sure that that's true with people. So it may be that in my communication with God, there'll be a greater degree of freedom, of revelation. But in order to have that same level of communication with a person, I have to have some of that same confidence. And that comes as a result of developing a relationship and experiencing from the other person that similar kind of acceptance. Does that make sense? Okay, yes.
It seems nowadays in communicating with people that they tend to give you more of an answer that they think you want than what you want, especially along matters of giving a person your testimony in religious lines. Is there any way to deal with that?
Well, to answer the question in two ways, I think if you're talking with someone and you think you've got an answer from them, I'm not talking now about evangelism, I'm talking now about just conversation with an individual, and you think you've gotten an answer that is conforming to what they think you want them to say, then you just have to keep asking other questions to clarify that. I do that continually in counseling, because I think what you're saying is very true at times. People will try to give the answer that they think will be acceptable. And so then it's up to me, as the one who wants the information, to think of different ways to ask the question to try and get the information in a different way, you see. And it may take two or three questions to get the final answer. Now, in the matter of witnessing, I think here again, people are educated to the phrases that are acceptable when someone wants to talk to them about God or about their relationship with God. And I think the best thing we can do at that point is not make an issue of it. As I said before, I understand witnessing to be my responsibility to let people know how wonderful Jesus Christ is, what he's done in my life, and how he could have that same effect in anyone's life who wants to be personally related to him. And leave it at that. I have no responsibility to get a decision from that person. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. I make myself available if they're interested in wanting to discuss it further. And I need to be ready to be able to answer their questions to lead them to a place of making a decision if that's what they decide. But it has to be from their perspective, not because I convince them. And that's where I think we have much of our difficulty in this so-called matter of witnessing. We think we have the responsibility of going around and convincing people that this is what they should do. The Spirit of God is the only convincer of men's hearts. So their answers, I accept. Whatever answer they give me is immaterial. My responsibility is to let them know what Jesus Christ has done in my life. Okay? All right, it's past our time and lunch is ready and they'll be waiting for us. Thanks, and look, have a great afternoon and evening, and we'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Don't forget to get the questions on the next chapter done, please.